Welcome to Redmond Radio and MCP Radio. I'm your host, Michael Domingo, editor of MCPMag.com. Today is February 19th, and here's what you'll hear in this week's episode. Vista exams go through retesting, Microsoft and IBM in a spat on open document formats, and how daylight savings time means Y2K-like problems, as well another episode of IT Web Gems. That and more when we return to MCP Radio and Redmond Radio from this quick break. Welcome back, and thanks for listening to Redmond Radio. For new listeners who continue to write and wonder what this podcast is all about, here's a quick explanation. The podcast basically is a quick way to go about your day doing your work as a Microsoft IT professional, all the while keeping up with the news. Basically, we do the heavy lifting when it comes to keeping you informed of what's happening every week. No need to listen to other podcasts every day. We do this once a week, and you listen to what has transpired in the prior week. One more thing, if you're a fan of Redmond Magazine, you as a Redmond Radio listener can have a chance to win a t-shirt and display your fanaticism. All you have to do is send me an email at michaeld@mcpmag.com. That's M-I-C-H-A-E-L-D at mcpmag.com with Redmond t-shirt on the subject line of your message. I compile those emails and ask someone to give me a number between one and whatever number of emails I received that week. The lucky recipient, whose name coincides with the random choice, gets the t-shirt. I've sent t-shirts to Pakistan, Italy, Germany, Singapore, and the UK, as well as numerous other folks here in the States. Wherever you're listening, if you can email, you can enter this contest. I'll announce the winner in the IT Web Gems segment of this podcast. And before we head into the news, one more piece of housekeeping. If you're still not downloading this show automatically, it's easy if you're using RSS or iTunes. Since many of you do use iTunes, here's the steps to do it. First, be sure you have iTunes by going to www.apple.com/iTunes/download. Download it, and once it's installed, you open it up and click on Advanced, Subscribe to Podcasts, which then opens up a URL window. There you enter the URL, mcpmag.com/rss/podcasts. If you don't have iTunes, you can of course use something else like Juice Receiver from SourceForge, iPodder, or even Creative Zen's Zencast software, which I use. Also, if you're using IE7, all you have to do is land on the mcpmag.com homepage. Click on the RSS link in the top menu bar, and you'll see the MCPMag podcast page with the last dozen or so shows. As well, you can click on the Subscribe to Feeds button to keep updated. So let's dive into some certification news first. According to a recent MCP newsflash, Microsoft's Learning Group has decided to put a few of its next-generation MCP exams for Vista back into development phase. Affected are exams for the IT professional level certifications, 7621 Pro, upgrading your MCDST certification to MCITB Enterprise support, 7622 Pro, desktop support enterprise, and 7623 Pro, desktop support consumer. According to the exam objective guides, these exams will head back into test development with beta spanning March and April. The exams are expected to go live in May. On another note, exam 7624 TS, deploying and maintaining Vista Client and Office System 2007 desktops, made its debut on Valentine's Day. Now, some other certification news outside of Microsoft. The Linux Professional Institute has launched a new vendor-neutral certification track aimed at senior-level Linux professionals. The LPI Level 3 track was announced on February 1st, but the track goes live as the new LPI 3 exams become available for the first time at the FOSDEM 2000 event in Brussels, Belgium on February 24th. The LPI 3 consists of a single core skills exam, dubbed the LPI 301, that covers authentication, troubleshooting, network integration, and capacity planning skills. In order to obtain LPI 3 status, candidates have to pass the LPI 301 exam, as well as already possess a current LPI 2 title. The LPI 301 exam, however, can be taken out of sequence of the other exams needed for the LPI 2 title. And that's it for the big cert news. Now let's check out the Newswire, which had a variety of news items, including this big one for those residing in areas where you change your computer clocks during daylight savings time. Microsoft is warning users of its calendar apps who especially use Exchange and Outlook that they should view any appointments as suspect until they communicate with all meeting invitees. And that's the case with any software, not just Microsoft's, who haven't taken into account a change in daylight savings time, which happens on March 11th beginning this year. The change was put into law by the U.S. Congress back in 2005. The problem, of course, not only affects computers, but any device with a built-in clock that hasn't taken the time change into consideration. And the problem is even more acute where manufacturers may have goods out there that are no longer supported because those companies have disappeared, or the computers contained in devices are solid state and not accessible. In those cases where the companies are still around, they're preparing for the Y2K-like problem with software workarounds. Microsoft, for example, is telling customers to download a program off their website that will shift all appointments based on the time change. And other companies are following suit with similar custom software workarounds. Intel Corporation has designed a computer chip that promises to perform calculations as quickly as an entire data center while consuming as much energy as a light bulb. The chipmaker said it developed a programmable processor that can perform about a trillion calculations per second or deliver a performance of 1.01 teraflops. It accomplishes this feat while consuming 62 watts of power when the chip is running at a frequency of 3.16 gigahertz. Intel's latest chip is still in the research phase, but it marks an important breakthrough for an industry obsessed with obtaining the highest amount of performance for the lowest energy consumption. But Intel execs say that the chip might never make it to market in its current incarnation. Building the chip would be a manufacturing marvel, and it's unclear whether there's an operating system intelligent enough to control it. Meanwhile, IBM says it has devised a way to triple the amount of memory stored on computer chips and double the performance of data-hungry processors by replacing a problematic type of memory with a variety that uses much less space on the slice of silicon. Big Blue says its new memory technology will help unclog crippling bottlenecks that build up as increasingly powerful microprocessors attempt to retrieve data from a separate memory chip faster than it can be delivered. Its solution entails swapping out most of the static random access memory used to store information directly on computer chips and integrating dynamic random access memory onto the chip. The company said the technology will be included in its server chips starting in 2008 and will expand to other products. Cisco Systems says it has acquired a small social networking company that allows businesses to create MySpace-like communities on their websites. Cisco paid an undisclosed amount to acquire privately held Five Across Incorporated, an 11-person San Francisco company whose publishing platform allows users to create personal web pages and post photos, videos, and audio clips, much like MySpace. The deal is expected to close within the current fiscal quarter. Analysts said the acquisition helps further Cisco's expansion beyond its role as purely a network equipment provider and into helping distribute the media that drives bandwidth consumption and even more network upgrades. The senior vice president of Dell's global online business and marketing division has decided to leave the company rather than oversee its new consumer group. John Hamlin's departure, announced in an email to several employees last week, comes a few weeks after founder Michael Dell resumed his role as chief executive officer, replacing Kevin Rollins. Dell has been making many executive changes lately amid mounting problems that include disappointing earnings, eroding market share, an ongoing federal accounting investigation, and several shareholder class action lawsuits. And finally, antivirus specialist Trend Micro warned of a flaw in its AV scanning engine that could result in denial of service or system takeover. The flaw affects a variety of products, including Trend Micro's InterScan Messaging Security Suite, InterScan Virus Wall, InterScan Web Security Suite, OfficeScan, and Server Protect offerings. Trend Micro's consumer offerings, such as Trend Micro Antivirus and PC Cillin, are also affected. The vulnerability stems from a corrupted UPX file in Trend Micro's scan engine. An attacker who successfully exploits it can cause a buffer overflow and trigger a Windows blue screen of death, or potentially execute arbitrary code on the compromised system. The vulnerability was first reported by iDefense Vulnerability Labs, a security researcher based in Sterling, Virginia. And that's the news this week. Remember, for news as it happens, check out mcpmag.com and searchcities.com daily. After the break, we jump right into IT Web Gems here on Redmond Radio. Welcome back, and thanks once again for listening to Redmond Radio. And as usual, before I start this segment, I'd like to once again remind you that you have a chance to win a Redmond t-shirt in my weekly giveaway. All you have to do is enter the random drawing by sending me an email at michaeld@mcpmag.com. That's michaeld@mcpmag.com. And tell me whether you are a new or regular listener of Redmond Radio. Any additional comments or feedback will be appreciated, but isn't necessary to make you a winner. So, this week's winner is Ted Mong. Thanks for listening, Ted, and congratulations. As well, good luck to everyone else next week. Coming up in our last segment, we cover Patch Tuesday and some interesting news on Vista sales. But before we get to that, it's that time again. Yes, the interesting, the weird, the banal, or what we call around here, IT Web Gems. And in our first IT Web Gem, Penn State University scientists said they've devised new anti-worm technology that can identify and contain worms milliseconds after an attack by analyzing data packets rates or frequency of connection and their diversity of connections to other networks. That allows the technology they term proactive worm containment to react more quickly to security threats. Peng Liu, a Penn State Information Sciences and Technology professor and lead researcher on the project, said in a statement that a lot of worms need to spread quickly in order to do the most damage, so our software looks for anomalies in the rate and diversity of connection requests going out of hosts. Researchers say that many current security methods focus on signature or pattern identification and cannot respond fast enough to prevent worms from exploiting networks. Those approaches, they say, often miss worms that mutate automatically, bypassing the existing anti-worm controls. Penn State's efforts, however, aren't the only ones seeking alternatives to signatures or patterns with varying degrees of success. Johann Ulrich, chief research officer at security firm SANS Institute, cautioned that some home and small business networks might have too much innocent activity, such as instant messaging or phone calls over the internet, that could be considered suspicious based on the speed of connections. And the Penn State technique won't catch slower spreading worms, although Liu said that current technologies already pick those up. The shadowy world of hackers is breeding ground for IT media, who tap it constantly to inspire and perpetuate FUD. It's those types of stories that attract website visitors and sell papers, so to speak. One recent survey done by security firm Acunetix claims that of 3,200 websites, around 70% of them contain vulnerabilities that can be fairly easily breached. Rather than take that number at face value, the folks at Network World magazine saw it as a challenge and jumped on those numbers. Paul McNamara, the blogger over at that magazine, has gone so far as to issue a challenge to Acunetix. The test involves randomly choosing 10 sites among the 3,200 in the survey and hacking into at least 7 of them. It's an interesting challenge for sure, but it seems that the Network World folks are asking Acunetix to help it do something illegal, which is to hack into websites and steal data. Don't you think? Check out the full story at the link on our website, which also contains Acunetix's response to the challenge. Websites with vulnerabilities still pose a challenge to hackers, but when laptops are misplaced with sensitive data that might not well be protected, well, that's like a gift under a Christmas tree waiting to be unwrapped. The FBI says that there is an average of 3 to 4 laptops being misplaced or stolen every month. The problem has seen some improvement, however, in the 5 years since being studied. 5 years ago, the Justice Department's Inspector General said 354 weapons and 317 laptop computers were lost or stolen during a 28-month review. The new report found that 160 weapons and 160 laptop computers were lost or stolen over a 44-month period. The FBI plans to issue a response to this study. Okay, a few items that are wholly unrelated. First up is this cool item I found over at the Red Tape Chronicles on MSNBC. Hate those telemarketer calls that you get while in the middle of dinner? Me too. MSNBC's Bob Sullivan chronicles one Andre LeMay, who took matters into his own hands and has been filing lawsuits through small claims court against some mortgage brokers. According to the report, LeMay has won so far judgments totaling $6,000 in 3 separate cases. The process isn't as difficult as it may seem, since, at least in LeMay's instance, because he lives in Sacramento, he can file the case online. Sacramento offers web-based forms and online court filings for small claims court cases. It won't be easy for everyone, but you can find out how Andre does it at killthecalls.com. If you've had success on your own or through the help of this site, tell me about it at michaeld@mcpmag.com or call me at 760-295-1564 and leave a message. If I use your story on the podcast, you instantly win a Redmond t-shirt. Now, can you visit a porn site accidentally? I've seen it happen in a demo I attended a few years ago when this poor guy who was making a presentation mistyped the URL and got pop-ups galore. We all laughed as the guy had to apologize while sheepishly trying to click out of them, and this was prior to the free pop-up blocker days. Well, just recently a teacher in Windham, Connecticut was convicted of exposing 7th graders to porn on her classroom computer. She says the images were a result of spyware and adware that took over her computer, but prosecutors were able to convince a jury otherwise. The teacher faces a 40-year prison sentence, but my bet is on the case being thrown out at some point due to some technical difficulties. But not before the teacher's career is destroyed. And finally, do you own a BlackBerry? If so, how many hours do you think you work? This story from Ars Technica reports on a survey of Digital Life America that says those who use BlackBerries and Trios should consider themselves slaves to their work. Of an online sample of 1,600 Americans, 19% said they worked more than 50 hours a week, compared to only 11% of the populace who do. With numbers like those, I'm now considering a different phone upgrade now that my 2-year contract is up. And with that, we conclude this IT Web Gem segment. If you have any suggestions for an IT Web Gem, send them to me at michaeld@mcpmag.com. That's michaeld@mcpmag.com. And I'll send you a Redmond t-shirt if I use it in the next podcast. We'll be back with the Microsoft headlines of the week from ENT Mag after this quick break here on Redmond Radio. Once again, thanks for listening to Redmond Radio, and welcome to the last segment. A few notes before we start. Be sure to check out the February 2007 issue of Redmond Magazine, which has a Vista installation guide by new writer Rhonda Layfield, as well as first reports on Windows Vista from readers. Over at Redmond Channel Partner this month, the holy grail of computing, unified messaging, is beginning to make inroads in the partner community. Find out what makes it compelling now and how partners are selling it. And finally, don't forget to check out the January issue of Redmond Developer News. That issue looks at Visual Studio features from a reader's perspective. Now, here's what made headlines this week over at entmag.com and redmondmag.com. First up, a Patch Tuesday update. If you recall, Patch Tuesday was last week, and it was a whopper of a fix with 12 new security bulletins that address vulnerabilities in its Windows, Office, and Internet Explorer products. The patch includes fixes for 4 word exploits, some of which have been in the wild for about 2 months, and at least one known Excel exploit. 6 of the new updates address critical issues, including Word and Office-related remote code execution vulnerabilities, a remote code execution vulnerability in Microsoft Data Access Components, a remote code execution vulnerability in Microsoft's Malware Protection Engine, and a cumulative security update for Microsoft Internet Explorer. A class action lawsuit that alleged Microsoft Corporation overcharged consumers was settled last Wednesday for an undisclosed amount. Details could be released at a court hearing April 20th. The lawsuit's original contention was that people who bought Microsoft software in the state of Iowa were charged as much as $453 million over for Microsoft products in the last 12 years because of a lack of competition. In another court action, a Russian court threw out a criminal case against a school principal accused of installing pirated Microsoft software in school computers. The case had received some notoriety because former Soviet leader Mikhail Gorbachev appealed to Microsoft's Bill Gates to not file criminal charges, even though Microsoft said it had nothing to do with the filing of the case, which was considered trivial by most privacy standards. The teacher was accused of having known about or ordering bootlegged versions of Windows and Office to be installed on 12 school computers. An offer to settle the case out of court has been extended to the teacher, but he refused, since the settlement included an apology and acknowledgement of wrongdoing. Microsoft and IBM are at it again in the open document format slap fight. Microsoft published a 4-page open letter on the web that accuses IBM of trying to block users' choice when it comes to document formats. It seems the letter comes in response to IBM's effort to scuttle progress of its Office open XML formats in a key European standards body. IBM and Sun Microsystems have argued that the proprietary nature of Microsoft's Office Open XML threatens the user's access to their own open document format, and that constitutes a threat to open access. But Microsoft has in fact been working towards greater interoperability between the OOXML and the ODF format led by the IBM group. Just last week, Microsoft announced availability of an open-source ODF translator add-in for Word 2007 that it sponsored through SourceForge, with plans to implement Excel and PowerPoint add-ins by the end of November. And last week, we told you about Sun's release of an ODF to Word translator. Now let's move to other software shipping news. Microsoft is shipping a developer's kit for the smallest of its device systems. The .NET Micro framework grew out of Microsoft's Smart Personal Objects technology initiative, which was designed to support very small embedded devices that do not have the resources to run a more full-function system like Windows Mobile. The .NET Micro Framework Software Developers Kit integrates with Visual Studio 2005, enabling spot devices developers to work in C# in a managed code environment. It also provides extensible hardware emulation and real-time debugging capabilities, including support for devices built on the ARM7 and ARM9 microprocessors. Among the spot devices that have debuted so far have been watches, weather stations, and GPS units, though Microsoft sees far more uses for such small embedded systems, such as in robotics applications. For those who are interested in Microsoft's plans for software as a service, the company has published a sample application illustrating how it's done. Microsoft late last week posted the software as a service sample application available on its SaaS Architecture Center on MSDN. Litware HR is a fictitious human resources application providing recruitment management software delivered as a service. It uses the .NET Framework 3.0 and SQL Server 2005 and implements single-instance multi-tenancy patterns. SaaS is becoming an increasingly important component of Microsoft's software delivery model, especially with consumers, and the company hopes it spreads to enterprise customers. It's been shipping for quite a while, so now that the Vista consumer version has been out, what has been the impact on PC sales? Apparently, it's been significant. Market research firm Current Analysis reports that sales of new PCs during the week ended February 3rd jumped by 173% over the previous week. Additionally, sales were up 67% year over year from the same week a year ago. Interestingly, though not particularly surprisingly, sales of new PCs were off in the 5 weeks leading up to the first consumer availability in January 30th. That slump was not only driven by consumers waiting for Vista, but also because OEMs and retailers deliberately reduced stocks of PCs shipping with Windows XP in advance of Vista's commercial debut, according to Current Analysis report. By comparison, sales of new PCs the week ending January 27, 2007 were down nearly 20% over the same period a year earlier. The hottest sellers, 59% of desktop purchasers and 76% of notebook buyers, chose Vista Home Premium. And believe it or not, that's our last piece of news and the end of this episode of Redmond Radio. Be sure to visit entmag.com and redmondmag.com daily for Microsoft news as it happens. As well, continue to send me email if you'd like to be entered into the Redmond t-shirt drawing. You can send those emails to Michael D. at mcpmag.com, which is also the address to send me feedback on the show and its contents. I'm Michael Domingo. I'd like to say thanks for taking the time to listen to Redmond Radio. See you here next week.